The Annie E. Casey Foundation.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Coming up, we're going to take a look at what's going to happen Sunday at the Women's March in St. Petersburg. And we're going to be talking first about the future of Social Security if the government shutdown takes place. We've heard a lot of news about the possible government shutdown this week. Earlier this morning, I spoke with Max Richmond, who is the director of the Committee to Protect Social Security and Medicare in Washington, D.C., and I asked him how the possible government shutdown would affect Social Security. Max Richmond, welcome back to WMNF. Do you think the government is going to shut down this weekend?
Well, it kind of looks that way at this moment. We'll have to see. It could be one of those last-minute events that brings us back on track. But I don't think anybody could tell you for certain what the plan is for tomorrow.
What happens to Social Security checks? Because people are calling here asking, does the government continue to send out Social Security checks in the middle of a shutdown?
Well, the last time this happened, I guess it was about 5 years ago, we found that Social Security checks were processed. They're very much automated at this point. So at least initially, there should not be an issue with people receiving Social Security checks in the event there's a short down, especially if it's a very short one. There are some Social Security issues that will be disruptive to people, especially if you're someone who's attempting to file during the shutdown period. If there is one, you may experience a delay. There may be issues involving appeals for disability claims. But in terms of the broader picture, Social Security checks should be processed and deposited. Many of them are, you know, direct deposit now or put out in the mail stream.
I want to go to the tax issue of the tax bill that was passed last year and signed to a lot of hoopla last year. President Trump trumpeted the tax bill as something good for the U.S. I'm wondering, some are suggesting that within the tax bill, because the deficit is increasing under the tax bill, that it's going to force Congress to look at cuts to Social Security and Medicaid. Tell us what your perspective is on that.
Well, that's certainly an enormous concern for us. You know, we're the second largest senior citizen lobbying group with nearly 4 million members and supporters around the country. And so many of the members of Congress that voted for, supported this tax legislation, you didn't hear a peep out of them about what this was going to do to the deficit, even though many of them have been railing against that growing deficit for years, some for decades. And we've been hearing just in the last few weeks some key members, including, for example, the Speaker of the House, Senator Rubio in Florida. I was just down there doing a town hall meeting last Friday. And we're hearing them start to talk about, well, this is not sustainable, this kind of growing deficit. And what do? We're going to have to look towards the programs like Social Security, like Medicare, like Medicaid. And I think the handwriting is on the wall that this is going to be an ongoing effort to cut these programs.
No, a lot of people don't understand. I certainly don't understand. Why would Congress want to cut Social Security? I thought Social Security was self-funded. That is, that the money that's devoted to Social Security and the Social Security Trust Fund is not part of the actual federal budget. And why would they attempt to cut Social Security in an effort to balance the budget?
I asked that very same question over and over again. You're absolutely right. Social Security is self-funded. It's funded by a dedicated revenue stream, the payroll tax, FICA tax, that funds the program. It has a surplus of about $2.5 trillion. They should not be looking at Social Security. But you know, the old expression, you go where the money is. Why did Willie Sutton rob banks? That's where the money was. And there is money in Social Security. And our fear is that just as the bank robbers did at one point, they'll be robbing Social Security because there is money there. Is it right? No. Is that money dedicated to paying benefits and also administering the program? The actual operation of the Social Security program comes out of that same revenue. The administrative cost of Social Security, which is extremely efficient, is about one-tenth of 1% of the amount that's paid out in benefits. And yet the government is not funding it adequately. We're going to be involved in a press conference later this morning with members of the Senate addressing that issue. But this is absolutely the wrong thing to do. And same with Medicare. Part A, Medicare, is self-funded by the out of the payroll tax. And, you know, one thing to watch, and I know you're aware of this, is a lot of code words. You won't hear too many people in Congress talking about cutting these programs. They're going to talk about reforming them. And you have to go behind that word, that code word, to find out what they're really talking about.
And the reform is a code word for cut.
The reform word is a word for cuts, privatizing the program. The speaker has been committed to privatizing the Medicare program for many years, both as now as speaker, before that as chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, and even before that as chairman of the House Budget Committee. He has laid out a plan many times now that would basically turn the program into a voucher program, where instead of getting your Medicare benefits under traditional Medicare, you would receive as a beneficiary a voucher, and you would be instructed to go out and look for health insurance. Well, that fails to recognize a very important fact. We have Medicare because private insurers did not want to insure older people at an affordable price because they couldn't make enough money off of it. So now, to go back to that system, I think, is a recipe for disaster. And by the way, the value of that voucher will not keep up with the cost of inflation. So more and more of the cost of health care will be shifted over to the beneficiaries. I call, again, voucher privatization, it's a kind of euphemisms. I call this a coupon. I call it coupon care. You'll get a coupon if the speaker has his way and supporters of this proposal have their way, and you'll have to use the value of that coupon, which will not go up with annually with the cost of health care, to go out and look for insurance.
So people could ultimately face financial hardship, deep financial hardship, if we go to a voucher or coupon system.
No question about it. You know, they're already facing considerable hardship. You know, the Medicare premium for those beneficiaries who sign up is, if you're on Social Security, it's taken out of the Social Security benefit check. That check is not keeping up with inflation. The cost of living adjustment is an inaccurate measure, which meant that in 2010 and 11 there was no cost of living adjustment. 2016 there was no increase in benefits because the measure that looks at inflation did not adequately take into account the increased costs of goods and services that seniors rely on. It looked more at the kinds of goods and services wage earners we're using, and that is not an accurate way to determine the COLA. So, 10,000 people, this is kind of remarkable, 10,000 people are added to the Medicare rolls every day. And we shouldn't be talking about cutting this program. We should be talking about figuring out how to reduce the cost in terms of reimbursement rates to providers, the high cost that the government pays for prescription drugs for those beneficiaries who've opted for Part D Medicare, and we should have these programs fully funded. Seniors are falling further and further behind every year because the system is not geared towards taking into account their needs, of the kinds of things they need, the health care costs they incur out of pocket, even with Medicare. So the last thing we should be looking at is cutting Social Security, cutting Medicare, cutting Medicaid.
We're talking with Max Richmond with the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. You're listening to WMNF 88.5 FM. Max, just getting back to the big picture of Social Security, as we stand here in the middle of January of 2018, how many more years will Social Security be solvent?
Well, the trustees, they issue a report every spring. The last report, last spring of 2017, indicated the program will be able to pay everybody every penny they're entitled to until the year 2034. And at that point, if there are no changes, there will be a reduction in benefits about 20%. Now, we're a national senior lobbying group. We don't have our heads buried in the sand. We recognize the program, Social Security, is a dynamic program that needs to change over time. But what we need to do is bring more revenue, I believe, into the program and make it sustainable even beyond 2034. And we have endorsed legislation that has many co-sponsors. It's in the House, introduced by Congressman John Larson of Connecticut, and in the Senate, Senator Richard Blumenthal, that would begin, you know, there's a cap. Many people don't realize this. There's a cap on wages subject to the payroll tax. It's about $130,000 a year. Many people don't realize it because they've never approached that kind of income. And after that, there's no payroll tax. Why? It doesn't make sense. So the legislation that we have supported, are supporting, would keep the cap at what it is, commence payroll tax at $400,000 in wages, and that would allow the program to be solvent for 75 years, improve the minimum benefit, have a more accurate measure and generous cost of living adjustment. That's what we should be doing. We would support eliminating the cap altogether. Politically, it's more realistic to keep that cap at what it is, and it goes up a little bit every year, but start again at $400,000, and eventually that annual increase of the cap will hit that, eventually it would hit that $400,000 level in wages.
Max, I know you've got to go because you've got a press conference coming up there in Washington, D.C., but one last question. A lot of baby boomers are looking at retirement and thinking about retirement. Is it a good idea if you're a baby boomer to take early retirement and get the early Social Security, or is it a better idea to wait?
Well, you know, it each individual's case is unique. If you do opt for early benefits at 62, you're going to receive a reduced benefit for the entire time you're on Social Security and receiving benefits. So, you know, there are clearly folks in a situation, financial situation, employment situation, who feel they need to start collecting at 62. If that's not something I think that is absolutely essential to getting by, it's better to wait. You know, the age will be 67 for everybody in a few more years. And ideally, if someone can wait till 70, you get the maximum benefit. But again, it is impossible to generalize that to every situation.
Well, Max Richmond, thanks a lot for coming on WMNF.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, that's Max Richmond, who heads a group called the Committee to Protect Social Security and Medicare. He's based in Washington, D.C. Right now, he's at a press conference with U.S. senators somewhere in Washington, and you might see him on TV tonight if you turn on your television. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. And if you want to comment about anything you've heard here so far, you can email us at dj@wmnf.org, and you can comment about it. We're going to talk about the upcoming Women's March. There's a couple events around Florida, including one in St. Petersburg this Sunday. And WMNF's Yvonne Gougelet did an interview about that. We're going to hear that interview right now.
Good afternoon. My name is Yvonne Gougelet. It has been 1 year since one of the largest protests in our nation's history, the Women's March, which took place in Washington, D.C. and hundreds of other cities around the nation and the world. This weekend, there will be another series of marches around the country to mark the 1 year anniversary. Organizers from the Women's March Florida have organized a march and rally in St. Petersburg this Sunday, January 21st, from noon to 4:30 at Williams Park. We're joined now by one of the organizers, Lisa Perry, from the Women's March St. Pete. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you for having me.
Can you tell us a little bit about the event this Sunday?
We're having a rally in Williams Park, and its actual start time will be 12:30 to 4:30 p.m. The rally is geared towards turning energy into action. Our theme for 2018 is power to the polls. So we're hoping that people can come out and find ways to plug in and create meaningful action throughout the 2018 election year.
One of my questions I wanted to ask you was, since the march last year, can you tell us a little bit about what has manifested since then in terms of organizing actions here in Tampa and St. Pete?
We have been very successful building a coalition with a lot of the nonprofits that already existed in the Tampa Bay area. We have hosted several events such as the anti-NRA protest and Day Without a Woman, which was also held in Williams Park last March. And we're really excited to be able to support organizations and people in the community that were already here doing the work for the election last year. And we just want to continue that support and create the groundswell that we're going to need to show up at the polls in November.
Are there weekly or monthly meetings that people can participate in order to get more involved, whether it's with the Women's March or any local organizations?
Yes, absolutely. Last year, we had monthly membership meetings where we were just planning more reactive behaviors. Going into 2018, we will be hosting 4 activist trainings and then 4 candidate forums, which we will be bringing out the gubernatorial candidates as well as local candidates from the Tampa Bay area, giving our members an opportunity to meet and greet and make a decision on who they want to get behind and how they can get involved in putting people into office. And we're going to alternate those month to month.
Which local groups here in town can you recommend our listeners to research in order to get more involved? I read that the Tampa Bay Area Feminists and the St. Pete Women's Collective were co-hosts of the rally on Sunday. Can you let us know about some organizations here in town that people might be able to get more involved in?
We work closely with FLIC, the Florida Immigrant Coalition. You can check them out. It's FLIC. We also work with SEIU Florida. And there's several other nonprofits, such as the League of Women Voters, Planned Parenthood, Greenpeace. They will all be attending the rally on Sunday. And we really wanted to provide our members an opportunity to come out and meet some of these organizations. So one of the best ways to plug in would to be able to show up on Sunday and just go through the activist village and see what fits for their interests.
There's also going to be a march in Sarasota as well.
We're just excited and we need your support. So we just encourage people to show up and get engaged and just really bring the power to the polls in November.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Lisa Perry. And we will see you on Sunday, January 21st in Williams Park. For WMNF, I'm Yvonne Gougelet.
And that rally begins Sunday at 12:30 in Williams Park in downtown St. Petersburg. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. If you want to comment about anything you've heard here, call us up, 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. There's so much in the news, I hardly know where to begin, but one thing I want to talk about is this. There's a whole debate about whether or not corporations will be repatriating all of that money that they have stashed overseas. And here's an article about Apple. Let me just read it. This is from the Associated Press. And it's got, I think, some good things for the country and some very interesting things that tend to contradict what the president promised. And the story says this. Apple is planning to build another corporate campus and hire 20,000 workers during the next 5 years as part of a $350 billion commitment to the United States that will be partially financed by an upcoming windfall from the country's new tax law. The pledge announced yesterday comes less than a month after Congress approved the sweeping overhaul of the U.S. tax code championed by President Trump that will increase corporate profits. Besides dramatically lowering the standard corporate tax rate, the reforms offer a one-time break on cash being held overseas. Apple plans to take advantage of that provision to bring back most of its roughly $252 billion in offshore cash, generating a tax bill of about $38 billion. It's something that Apple CEO Tim Cook promised the company would do if it could avoid being taxed at the 35% rate. And I'll just flip the page here. That had been in effect under the previous law. About $78 billion of the $350 billion in U.S. investments will be paid for money that had been overseas, Apple estimated. Okay, so Apple has stashed about $250 billion overseas. They're going to bring back and invest in domestic enterprises here in the U.S. $75 billion. All right, and that raises a question. What's it going to be doing with the rest? What's it going to do with the rest of the money? Well, after plowing back nearly $46 billion into dividends and stock repurchases in its last fiscal year, Apple is still likely to funnel a big chunk of that overseas money to its shareholders. So Apple is going to get this windfall. What's it going to do with it? Is it going to invest most of it in jobs in the U.S.? No. It looks like it's going to funnel a big chunk of that overseas money to its shareholders. Yesterday's announcement was designed to be a show of faith in the U.S. The public show of support also helps the optics of a company that will still continue to make most of its iPhones, iPads, and other gadgets in factories in China and other countries that offer cheap labor. And you can find that article from the Associated Press on the front page of this morning's Tampa Bay Times. I just read part of it. 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. There is so much out there. You know, I wonder if this story grabs you at all. It's been out there for days now since last Friday. And the update on the story, it's all about President Trump, allegedly, before he was president, paying off a porn star. Now, let me just read the latest update on it. Two reports this week offered more details about what they described as a sexual relationship between Donald Trump and Stephanie Clifford, the porn film actress who was reportedly paid $130,000 in hush money shortly before the 2016 election. In Touch magazine published excerpts yesterday from its 2011 interview with Clifford, 38, known as Stormy Daniels. By the way, Stormy Daniels, or Stephanie Clifford, used to live in Tampa. Maybe she still does. I don't know. I'm going to continue to read from the article. In these articles from 2011, she confirmed that she had an affair with Donald Trump. It started in 2006 and continued on and off for a few years. A Slate article published Tuesday by Jacob Weisberg, the editor-in-chief of the Slate Group, expanded on what he told the New York Times last Friday. Slate detailed his communications with Clifford from August to October 2016, just before the election. Her account is similar to that published by the magazine In Touch. Clifford told Weisberg that her lawyer, Keith Davidson, who has represented a number of porn film stars and models, had negotiated the $130,000 deal with Michael Cohen, Donald Trump's lawyer. Weisberg said that she was sharing these details because Trump had not yet paid her or finalized the confidentiality agreement. The Wall Street Journal published an article Friday reporting that the payment had been made. Davidson, the attorney, did not immediately respond to a request for comment yesterday. Cohen, Trump's attorney, also again denied that there had been any sexual relationship between Trump and Clifford. So that's just a story out there, and I don't know. I find it pretty interesting. 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. We can go to George in Lakeland. George, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Rob. A point about Apple. yes, you're right. The iPhones, iPads are still going to be made out of overseas. But, I mean, in a little defense of Apple, they are going to open a huge server farm in Nevada. It's going to create thousands of jobs, you know, because they got to build it. They got to hire Americans. And, you know, it's going to, a lot of engineers are going to be hired, too, to maintain it. You know, that's where all our messages and FaceTime chats and everything go through. So, in a way, I mean, I'm not going to give Trump 100% credit, but he does get at least, you know, 20, 30% credit. But yeah, I mean, why would Apple want to make iPhones and iPads in the U.S.? You know, they got to pay us, what, $30 an hour, $20 an hour, when they can get them made in China for $300 a month, you know, so...
Yeah, you know, and George, isn't though that when people talk about the decline of the middle class, President Trump has talked about it, the Democrats have talked about it, isn't that what's declining the middle class in the U.S. and the working class? That, you know, we no longer have jobs that pay a living wage, and now the U.S. is in competition with China. So the U.S. is going to have to kind of go down to Chinese standards when it comes to working conditions, wages, pensions, you know, all that stuff. And so, you know, there is a growing middle class in China, but the vast majority of people in China are still living paycheck to paycheck, very impoverished, and that's where we're headed.
Now, well, if you choose to, you got to get out there and get an education. I mean, we've been saying that. I heard that when I was in high school in the late 80s. Get an education, because jobs are not going to be around for low-skilled workers.
Well, I know a lot of people, and I hope they'll call in. I know a lot of people who are have gone through college, and now they're having a hard time finding a good job. And they can find a job that pays $8, $9, or $10 an hour. Some of them are living with their parents, but many of them aren't seeing the kind of good jobs that they thought their education would bring. They've gone through gotten a 4-year degree, and it's a struggle to find a good paying job out there.
Well, no, I mean, these Apple engineers are going to be making a good amount of money.
Well, I agree. I certainly agree. And I think if you get the right education, but you know, my guess is, you know, and I've met a bunch of young people over the last 20 years who go to places like USF and other places and aren't getting the kind of jobs once they graduate that they hope. Now, many are. You know, I just met a young physician's assistant, person who's going to be a physician's assistant in the next 5 years, and she's doing great.
I mean, in the news, and Democrats and Republicans, everyone's saying it, STEM, STEM, science, technology.
Well, George, I agree 100%.
They keep saying it over and over.
I agree 100%, but those college kids that I'm talking about are still on the hook for college loans. Many of them couldn't afford to pay out of their pockets.
Yeah,
so now that,
for mine.
Yeah, the college loan is weighing them down. I mean, let's hear from some people, because George, you and I have our ideas, but let's hear from some people who actually, who are out there working. Maybe if you're 25 or 30 and you're out there working right now, tell us what it's like for you. How about that?
Sounds good.
Okay, George, thanks a lot. Great to hear from you. Thanks for starting the conversation. 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. Deborah from Sarasota writes, taking Social Security early results in more money in total, as you get an extra 4 more years of income. If you're able to sock some of it away and collect interest, you're much better off than waiting. That's Deborah's opinion out there. 813-239-9663. David writes this, it's interesting that Stormy Daniels got to see the Trump rump. Well, David, I don't know about that. Obviously, she did, but I don't know why that's of value to us. Anyway, so David goes on to say, that would be a scary sight. He says, I find it interesting that there's a lot of focus on the two Amazon headquarters, but not as much attention on the Apple second headquarters competition. Also, what's your take on Miami being the only Florida city to make the top 20 finalist list for Amazon's second headquarters? I'm disappointed that Jacksonville, Orlando, and Tampa Bay area didn't make the cut. David, my take is that transportation is a key issue. And I don't think Miami's transportation is that good. So my guess is that beyond the airport and the connections to South America and to Europe, Miami doesn't have much more going for it than we do. I mean, the traffic in Miami, I think, is terrible. 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. And let's go to Danny in Tampa. Hi, Danny. You're on. What's your take?
Hey, Rob. You know, wouldn't it be something if Stormy Daniels came out like Jennifer Flowers? I mean, you know, just saying yes, you know, change the story and publicly saying that, yes, she did have an affair with and Trump would deny it. Can you believe that would be something like a Bill Clinton Monica thing, wouldn't it?
Well, you know, I do want to see an interview with her. I want to see what she has to say.
Yes, definitely. I think she will be. I think you're going to see her on TV pretty soon. I'm pretty sure she's going to get her 15 minutes and more. You know, I tell you, Colbert was making a skit out of it last night. He was saying just that they went up to the hotel room according to her story, and when she came out of the bathroom, he was already in bed, and she looked at him and she went, here we go. And Colbert says, I know the feeling. And they showed the inauguration. He went, here we go. So it's just, you know.
Well, you know, the part of the story that came out yesterday that interests me is that Donald Trump's lawyer sent out a new letter denying that Daniels had sex with Donald Trump. And
exactly,
so I wonder, why would Donald Trump's lawyer have access to that information or be the spokesperson for Stormy Daniels? That raises...
Yeah, true. That's weird. That's getting interesting for Trump because now he says that he's eager to talk to Mueller last night. And now, of course, Bannon's cut the deal with Mueller. And Bannon's going to... if he'll hurt Trump some or a lot or not at all. Well, let's just see that. I mean, you know. And then also to... about the physical, you know what? You know, I'm going to go along with the doctor for the most part. You know, he was Obama's doctor and everything. But like I said, it's pretty weird how you can be 6'2 and then 6'3. You know, I don't get that. First of all, and second of all, I'm not buying the whole thing that he's in excellent shape. I mean, you know, we all some of us need to lose a few pounds, and I'm sure that he does too. But you know, I wouldn't say maybe and they were waiting. I really don't care about that. I'm just trying to say that. I just think the whole thing is, I don't think you can have that much junk food and be that in excellent health unless you, like he says, he's one of those rare people that's got rare genetics. You know what I'm saying? And about that part. So at this point, I doubt anything he says because he's lied about 2,000 times this year.
Well, you know, Danny, you know, there's this whole new girther movement out there that's challenging President Trump on his weight and height. And there are pictures out there. I don't know if they're true, but I saw a picture yesterday on the internet. It's always a dangerous thing to count on, showing President Trump and President Obama side by side. President Obama is 6'1", and President Trump is slightly shorter than President Obama. So
the internet, you don't know if that's true or not, but that is interesting. And as far as like President Obama, he's in much better shape than Trump was. Actually, he's probably one of the greatest of in shape presidents ever in history. I mean, he would probably leave Trump huffing and puffing on the basketball court, even though the mooch says that he's seen him swish at half court, and the mooch says that he saw him throw a spiral through a football through a tire, like Sid Luckman did.
Wait a minute, that Trump could do that?
Yeah, he could do that. Oh, yeah, that he
well, maybe he could. I still want to see President Trump on the scale to see whether or not he's telling the truth. Because
I'm going to put on a few pounds, and I'm not as tall as he is.
There's an offer
that he's clocking in about.
Danny, there's an offer out there by a guy in Hollywood, I think, who will give $100,000 to charity if President Trump goes on a scale.
Really? I haven't heard that one, Mark. Rob. Let me leave you with this. I mean, you know, David K. Johnson was, you know, he was one of the biographers of Trump. He was asked the other day on MSNBC, again, for a countless time, I don't know how many times he said it. He said basically that Donald is just in it just for himself. That's his whole thing in life, to be glorified. And whenever you ever notice when they're clapping for him in a function where he just passed a bill or a rare bill or something where, you know, he got some success and they're all clapping. And they were saying, you know, about the tax reform. Oh, you're the greatest president ever. How he's like looking up in the sky and going, you know, that's what I think he lives for. And that's like super narcissistic. And then that's his whole, he's in it just for himself, for the glorification. That's what all the biographers say about him and all the people who know him.
All right, Danny, thanks a lot. I mean, I think that's where President Trump got caught up in the Wolf book, is that Wolf offered a lot of praise and defense of Trump and was able to get inside the White House to get this book written. So, yeah, we know that the weight of the president's heart is to praise him. 813-239-9663. So if you're ever in a meeting with President Trump, that's probably the way to start the meeting. We're going to take some more phone calls. And James Lyles is our phone producer today. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Jim's on I-4. Hi, Jim. You're on WMNF. What would you like to say?
Yeah, Rob, thanks for taking my call. There was a conversation before your last one about the economy and, you know, everything's coming in from around the world. You know, back in the 50s, you know, we had a closed door and we taxed items that came in, you know, at our ports. But right now it's a world economy. And there isn't anything a president can do as far as saving the middle class and saving jobs, because it's all about capitalism. And capitalism is going to ruin the middle class. It's all about money, and wherever they can make the most money, that's the way. Unless you get rid of capitalism, you know, we're not going to be able to save the middle class at all here.
And Jim, do you think there's something in between? I mean, you know, there's been a lot of talk the last few days about Norway, and people have been pointing out that Norway has a strong social net, safety net. It has high wages. It has a government health care program similar to Canada's single payer. You go in, you don't pay anything if you have an operation. Do you think there's somewhere between eliminating capitalism and going to communism? Is there somewhere in between?
Yeah, absolutely. I think having a socialist type of government absolutely helps. You know, if you want to ship jobs overseas, then we've got to collect the taxes to subsidize the people who can't work. You can't just exclude them and say, you know, you're not fit for this country or what have you. Downgrade them. We've got to, you know, and that's the next step is we've got robotics. And robotics is going to kill the whole society.
Yeah, a lot of those auto companies that say that they're reinvesting in the U.S. are building plants where the robots really are building the cars. There's no longer that traditional assembly line that we remember from the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're right. Robotics is a big issue. It ought to be on the table as part of the discussion. What happens to America's middle class as more and more jobs are taken over by robots?
Yeah, that's a big problem, and we're not even talking about that. They should be talking about, you know, if a robot takes a person's place at work, then that robot should be taxed, or somehow there's got to be money put back into the government that would pay a person to sit on a bench somewhere.
Yeah, there's got to be a transition where, you know, obviously, I guess the people that make cars who probably know better than I do or you do think robots build them better. Okay, all right, let's buy into that. But then what do you do with those workers who are displaced in places like, you know, Alabama, the car shops in Tennessee, the car factories in Detroit and you know, around the Great Lakes? You know, there ought to be a discussion of what happens to those displaced workers when they're replaced by robots. And we don't really have that discussion. You know, sometimes our presidential debates are devoid of the big issues. And this is one of the big issues. And you raised it. And I'm glad you did, Jim.
Yeah.
All right,
well,
Jim. Thanks. Thanks a lot. All right. Great to hear from you. 813-239-9663. Charlie writes, it is my understanding that when the politicians say we need a level playing field, it really means that American workers can't get a pay raise. It would defeat the purpose of bringing jobs back because of the cheap labor abroad. It sounds like it's something to do with tariffs, but really? That's Charlie and Brandon. Yeah, you know, if we are in competition with places like El Salvador and the Philippines and Vietnam and China and Mexico, where wages are a lot lower, it means that American workers are going to have to expect less. Well, if they expect less when they work in a factory here, what happens to that great middle class? You know, I'll tell you just a quick story. We used to have a DJ here at WMNF who worked at Sears. He worked at the Sears down the street on Martin Luther King, back when where the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are right now, their training camp. That used to be the Tampa Bay Center, a big mall. And a good friend of ours that used to work here at WMNF for years was a salesperson at Sears. And he sold tools. He sold Craftsman tools. And he had a pension. And he had a good wage. And he was able to buy a house. And you can't say that today when you're in retail. You can't say that you've got a pension or that you're able to buy a house or that you you're making more than $8 or $9 an hour. Just it's pretty rare. But that was the middle class back in the day, and I'm going back 25 years. 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. Jim, thanks for your phone call. We're going to go to Sid in Tampa. Hi, Sid, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hi, Rob. Enjoy the shows. I thought it was interesting, two things today with Apple coming back with their investment. They used to say, oh, we aren't greedy. We are over here because these countries educate their engineering students better than the USA. But now they're coming back because of a tax break. But the guest you had on talking about Social Security and Medicare.
Yeah, Max Richmond, yeah.
The idea that Paul Ryan thinks that he can utter these statements and have these plans that make so many people so nervous. I'm 57, and I've been paying into those taxes since I was 15 years old. And the idea that that person talks about stealing all of the money from the people in a system that was founded in the 30s, by FDR. I mean, these kind of things that make this whole country anxious. We need someone with military training to help us. We are going to need a Lenin and Trotsky or a Mao Zedong kind of thing, the way this country's going, to take it back.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing about Paul Ryan is that he does want to privatize Social Security and Medicare. But the interesting thing about Paul Ryan is that, as I recall reading his biography, his dad died when he was young. And it was money from his dad's Social Security that kept that family out of poverty as Ryan was growing up. So now he wants to take away the guarantees of Social Security, make it something less. You know, the stock market goes up and down. And not everybody is good at investing. And so if you put your money in the stock market and the investment goes down, as it did for many years during the Great Recession that began in 2007, you lose a bundle and it's harder and harder to live. It's just better to have a program that has low overhead like Social Security.
Exactly.
And gives you a guaranteed payment. It's a brilliant program, and it's self-funded. It's funded by us, the workers. We put into it, and it now has that surplus that Max was talking about.
I'm able to go to 70, but how do I know it's even going to be there in the next 4 years instead of 13 years?
Well, he said the trust fund administrators say it's going to be there for the next 14 years at the current rate. But then we've got to think about, well, what to do about it. And that's the debate. I mean, the Republicans think that the only answer is to privatize Social Security. And what about taking Max's idea, instead of having the wages that are taxed for Social Security capped at $118,000, what about bringing that cap up to $400,000 or $500,000?
Yeah.
Why not have that debate? We should be having it.
Sure, I agree 100%.
All right, Sid, great to hear from you.
Thanks for letting me on.
All right, thanks. 813-239-9663. It'd be great to hear somebody in their 20s or 30s talking about the quality of jobs that they're finding and that their friends are finding. If you're out there and you're in your 20s or 30s and you can comment about the quality of jobs out there, please call this number, 813-238-8001. And Danny was talking about David K. Johnston. He was just on Democracy Now! This morning at 9 o'clock, and we're going to replay that Democracy Now! David K. Johnston, the tax expert, former New York Times reporter, has written a new book about Donald Trump. He'll be on our HD3 channel, The Source, today at 5 o'clock on Democracy Now! That's when we replay Democracy Now! On HD3. So you can just go to WMNF.org, and when you go to listen, choose the one that says HD3, The Source, and that's our all news and talk channel. Let's go back to the phones. We're going to go to Gary in Dunedin. Gary, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob. Great show, as always. You know, this is actually a shout-out to the Trump people, some of whom called in. And it's very puzzling to me. Like, if these people that call in and post on comments boards and do other things defending Donald Trump, if they had, I'd like them to ask themselves, if they had somebody in their life, maybe in their family, a neighbor, business associate especially, who behaved as Donald Trump has always behaved. This is not a matter of fake news or opinion about how Donald Trump has always conducted himself. He's always been a bully. He's always been an abusive type of a person who looks for loopholes, who uses bankruptcy, who stiffs his contractors, who self-confessed sexually assaults women, and is a very mean person, uses harsh language, lawsuits as intimidation, dishonesty, narcissism. If you had somebody like that in your social circle, in your business circle, in your family circle, or even as a neighbor, you wouldn't like them. You wouldn't want to deal with them. You'd wish you'd never met them. So how can anyone who knows what Trump really is, and it's obvious how he really is, even from The Apprentice, how could you defend him? It's not a matter of fake news or liberal versus conservative. It's just he's obviously a nasty man. So the people who defend him, either they admire his nastiness or what? I don't get it.
Well, we'll hear from some Trump people. We welcome them to call. Let's see what they say about that.
Yeah, I hope they can actually answer this question. He's obviously a nasty person. How can you possibly back him?
Okay. Gary, thanks a lot.
Thanks, man.
All right, great to hear from you. And somebody anonymous from the 352 area code writes this about robots, says, okay, let's say everything goes to robotics. At the end of the day, someone has to buy that product. If most labor will be taken over by robots, then how will ordinary people buy their products if there will be no income for those ordinary people? Yeah, that really is the question we were raising, is what happens as robots take over, is if these factories are returning to the U.S., and they are largely robotic factories, what's in it for the American working class and middle class? What do you think? 813-239-9663. You know, it's interesting. It's all guys this morning. We haven't had a single woman. Let's go to Kevin in Bradenton. Hi, Kevin. You're on. What would you like to comment about?
Hey, Rob. I love the show. Mainly, I want to comment about the talk about the economy, you know, the erosion of the middle class. I think that it all ties in if you look at the way that Apple is choosing to continue to make their iPhones overseas and then put most of their profits into the dividends. You know, the investor class has been kind of the favored class in this country for quite a while, from the capital gains, you know, people that make their money on that, compared to ordinary working people who basically pay 20% out of their 401k when they go to take it out. You know, but I also want to bring up that I think that the values in this country, a quick example is a nephew and a niece of mine who are both very brilliant and, you know, international baccalaureate, and one went into computer science and the other went into teaching. And the teacher, she's, you know, has a master's and teaches autistic children. And I'm sure she might be making, you know, 40-something thousand now after, you know, years. And her brother went into computers, obviously. writing code and software engineering. And, you know, he's, I don't know if he's a millionaire, but he probably is. So I think that, you know, that as a whole, our society, you know, we just are just like the people that love Trump. I believe that they just want to be wealthy. And we don't
honor that work that's really also valuable, and that is teaching kids. We don't honor them by paying a teacher $40,000 a year after years of postgraduate study.
And I think that that ties into why we're headed in the wrong direction. But the one thing that I think really could turn things around, and it's the one reason that I'm so disappointed in the Democrats, to be honest with you, is, you know, if you look at the game plan for the Republicans, they've always all got together about one issue, and that was lowering taxes. I mean, they could be different on any other issue, but they were all in agreement on that one issue. And so when the time came, they got their troops together, and they passed this most important tax plan to all of them. Well, in my opinion, if the Democrats had that same single-mindedness about giving us single-payer, universal health care, it could cure. I really believe this.
Well, and that is the big issue. I can tell you, you probably could tell me what the Republicans stand for in three sentences. They want smaller government, lower taxes, and less regulation. And
yeah.
And so, okay, that's what the Republicans want. What do the Democrats want?
I know, and to me, the one thing that could help the middle class and keep everything from eroding is if we took some of the money that is going into this rat hole of this healthcare for profit system and put it back in the pockets of the people that would now have the money to buy the products that the robots are making. Because you all are right, the robots are coming. And, you know, the reason that these things aren't talked about, I think it starts, like you were saying, the debates. Well, who controls the debates? I mean, if you watch a debate from Canada or somewhere else, there's like six or eight different parties talking about all these different issues. And in our country, you know, they talk about the things that they're supposed to talk about because it's such a two-party system. I mean, back in the day, Nader couldn't even get a chance to enter the debate. And I think that's where a lot of the discussion dies, right there at the debate.
Yeah, I think so, too. Kevin, thanks a lot. Thank you.
Sure.
Great to hear from you. 813-239-9663 is our phone number here at WMNF in Tampa. Scott's in Tampa. Hi, Scott. What is your comment today?
Hey, Rob. Scott McIntyre, Solar Energy Management, Tampa.
Hey, Scott.
Appreciate you all you do. Really, I do a lot of volunteer work with USF, try to help students, you know, determine what their careers are going to be, and principally with the school of sustainability. And a lot of these students are getting degrees and things that just can't get them jobs, for one thing, and that's a real problem. So career guidance is a real problem. But the real core problem in Florida and the nation is that we don't have any leadership, and we don't have good captains at the wheel. We've got full-on greed in America right now. Full-on greed. Look at the stock market. It's all about greed. And so, and I'm okay with greed, but at the same time, we have to help the people who don't understand how the system works. And so, you know, getting better leadership is really critical, especially in Florida. So if there's Democrats that are listening to, and I'm an independent, if there's Democrats that are listening to this program this morning, if they want change within Florida, let alone the nation, they need to get behind their change in governorship, specifically in this state. You're going to have Adam Putnam for 8 years. So there will be no change in Florida. And same thing happens in Washington. And that's my comment, Scott.
All right, Scott, great to hear from you. And
thanks, Paul.
Thanks. Scott has been on several times. We've got to get him back to talk about solar energy and give it, stretch it out. We've only got 2 minutes left. I was going to ask him a question about solar energy, but I don't think it would be fair to him. Gina writes this, jobs have vanished in so many areas. Newspapers, for one, when I was a kid, they were robust, thriving with increasing circulation, hiring, expansion into other papers' territories, which made for better quality newspapers. That's Gina's email. Gina, thank you for that. And we're going to go back to the phones in the short time that we have remaining. We're going to go to Larry in Sarasota. Hi, Larry. You're on WMNF. What would you like to say?
Well, Rob, you guys were talking about Social Security. And, you know, there's a few things they could do to lost her Social Security, and I think you might have touched on it, but not limiting how much you can pay in every year, because, you know, once you get up to $100,000 or $110,000, you stop paying in Social Security.
Yeah, that's what our guest said. We had a guest on at the top of the hour who said that,
I mean, I've made over enough money to go, past that on quite a few different occasions, and I thought, wow, this is crazy. I mean, if you're making money and you're putting it in, you keep putting it in.
Yeah, he said that if we extend it to $400,000 to cover all the income up to $400,000, we could keep Social Security solvent for 75 years. Hey, Larry, we're out of time.
Keep it up forever. Okay. I mean, they don't have
to
limit them.
Okay, Larry, I'm sorry, we're out of time. Hey, if you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115, and I'll play that comment of yours tomorrow at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned for Mitch Perry. He's coming up on the Midpoint program. You're listening to the Bay Area's community radio station. This is WMNF, Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota.